Join us now as we ascend the treacherous Dice Tower Network. Look at this. We stumbled onto the fledgling board game Point of View. What a treat. I'm going to try and touch it. Crikey, it nearly took me arm off.
Welcome to the Board Game Point of View. We are a group dedicated to the betterment of all people under the banner of tabletop gaming and also a very proud member of the Dice Tower Network. My name is Adam. I'm your moderator. Tonight I'm joined by Steven.
Whoop whoop. That's the sound of the police.
And Seth?
Just call me the Rear Admiral.
Okay. What?
You can't tell me what after what you did.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just thinking, why would we call you that? I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
You're eating marine wildlife right now, so...
He breathed into his cupped hands, smelled the fishy breath, and was right. Like, I'm the rear
Too close. Too real.
We've got a lot to talk about tonight, so we're just going to dive right in. Talk about life a little bit. Thanksgiving, gentlemen. Seth, are you coming back to Billings for Thanksgiving this year?
Odds are I'll be around at least one of the 5 days I have off of school.
You're going to be on the outskirts of Billings, not actually in it, just around Billings.
Well, it depends who has the best Thanksgiving meal planned, okay?
Steven, you're headed to Wyoming soon, and you'll be spending Thanksgiving there with your family.
No.
You won't be.
What?
Game changer.
Yep. I will actually be with my family, yes, but in Colorado visiting the extended family for Thanksgiving.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who I'm guessing you don't get to see that often, so that'll be fun.
So I'm actually going to Wyoming, and then like 4 days later, we're going to Colorado, so that's going to be very
nice.
Quick.
And are you
going
to bring some board games to play with your family members?
Oregon Trail, maybe.
Well, obviously that one. I always have that on my person. But I'm just saying, hardcore board games, I'm not sure. My family, they usually find other ways of occupying themselves.
I'm headed to North Dakota.
Pray for you.
No, we're going to visit my in-laws there, brother and sister-in-law, the niece and nephews. They are gearing up to be missionaries in Africa. So this will be the last major holiday we get to spend with them for a few years, I think. We're excited for them. But obviously, family moving away across the world, we're going to want to spend as much time with them as we can. So,
I mean, I suppose.
Yeah.
I dare.
Yeah. So it'll be good. It'll be fun. And
awesome.
Yes, I will be bringing games to play because they enjoy board games as well.
Like the Oregon Trail?
You know what? I'm just going to give that to you and you can take it wherever
Dude,
you want.
Dude, I
like.
Already have it.
Second favorite Thanksgiving food. Because everybody has their favorite, but second favorite.
I mean, there's so many good things.
Dude,
you know,
I have
to say green bean casserole.
Wow.
Heyo, that's mine too.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What?
I was just about to say that because
wow.
you were taking
oh
so long. But
you guys are mind melding.
We are, wow.
So well right now.
Yeah. Dude,
that is just
number two is green bean casserole all the way. Number one is actually pumpkin pie.
Ah.
Yeah.
Number one is scallop potatoes.
Nice.
Dude, those are super good. That's like my number three.
Nice.
It's funny because like all the classics, like the actual turkey or whatnot, the ham, is like way down on the list for
it
me.
Is.
It's all about those sides.
Yeah.
That's true. I do really like the turkey, but like turkey with the potatoes or with the casserole or with the stuffing, that's where it really shines.
Right.
Dude, or like next day turkey sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the classic right there.
The nice thing about Thanksgiving is you've got your plate, and obviously it's got to be an oversized plate because it's Thanksgiving.
Well, yes.
You put all the stuff on the plate, and it can just mix and like bleed into each
other. Create its own food.
Right.
That's awesome. But you take a bite of
it, and it's awesome because it all goes so well together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The holiday that throws a wrench in there and has like a red enchilada. Which are great, but not necessarily for Thanksgiving.
I'm going to have to say mashed potatoes and gravy. Second favorite. Yeah. Yeah.
Very classic.
It is. I mean, you put that in the middle of your plate.
Yes.
And that's like the foundation.
It's like the volcano in the middle of the island.
Right. Yeah.
But depending on how tall you build up your mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to make the volcano. It's got to be
tall.
You
need a mountain. Definitely. Yeah.
That's the second best part of Thanksgiving is that volcano.
Although,
building the mashed potato.
Do you go like garlic mashed potatoes or anything? Or just straight up?
Oh, garlic, yeah.
Oh, it's got to be, yeah. Just straight up mashed potatoes. I don't feel it.
It has to either be garlic or like cheesy.
Yeah,
exactly.
But
if you were going to actually say just standard, I would have been very disappointed. So.
No, garlic for sure.
Good work.
We're all
disappointment averted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if
Seth, no, I'm just freaking hungry though.
Right,
thank dude. You. See, this is why I had to eat some tuna.
Canned tuna, yeah.
So Seth, you'll be here around the outskirts of Billings. You will not be
at least
able to. Right, you won't be able to host your weekly game meetup.
Well, that remains to be seen, Adam.
Okay.
I will be going back to Billings for at least a day or two.
Right.
But I think I also have a group of friends staying in Bozeman that we'll be playing some games together.
Nice. What have you guys been playing as of late?
Well, we've been playing a bunch of different games, obviously, with Rooks here and our own collections. We've been playing a lot of X-Wing. Today, though, we played Bloodborne, the Cool Minion Knot game designed by Eric Lang.
Nice.
It's pretty awesome, actually. We only got to play one round, and I don't know, we can talk about it later, talk about it now, but there were a lot of cool stuff that I enjoyed about this game.
Yeah, no, let's talk about it now. This is the game
based on a video game.
Yeah.
And Steven mentioned in the last podcast that there aren't many games that really capture the same feel of their video game counterparts, and that probably is still true for this game.
Okay.
But it does take some of those mechanics. It does take some of those mechanics and puts them to good use. The fact that you can and will be killed by the monsters you're fighting. This is a semi-cooperative game where you each are contributing kind of power to fighting monsters. But the monsters will roll exploding dice. So on some of the sides, it will, instead of just having a number, it will have the number like a 2 and then a plus. That means you roll it again. Mm-hmm. And this can go on infinitely, theoretically. But most of the time it ends with it going above your 8 maximum health and just killing you outright.
Okay.
A funny thing is that there are boss monsters in this game that you decide beforehand, and they have an effect on the entire game, not just when you fight them. And the boss monster we chose, kind of accidentally without realizing, was one that only allows you to die twice or you're eliminated from the game.
Wow.
Normally you can die as many times as you want, you just lose money, but we chose one that had a permanent penalty, and it was crazy. We all died the first round we were fighting a monster. It was just this little pig or something, and it rolled its exploding dice, and it just kept adding and kept adding and killed us all.
Dude,
and
that so right pig out of went the... ham.
Oh, nice. It did indeed.
So unassuming.
Well, I mean, it was like a, I don't know.
It was a demonic.
Right.
It was very demonic. This game, very thematic to Bloodborne and the fact that everything is mutated and dark and disturbing. You're collecting blood. That's your main resource. Stuff like that.
So it's a good family game, is what you're saying. For like the younger kids and stuff.
You're kind of working together and fighting monsters as any good family would.
Overcoming the darkness, fighting the evil, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. But then you can also play cards that kind of hurt your opponents as well. And so it got to the point where I killed one of my opponents with a firebomb. Then I had another weapon that allowed me to double the damage of monsters to any allies who were engaging in melee, and got a kill with that as well. So that was pretty great.
Nice. So you say you're playing semi-cooperatively?
That's right. Like, okay. I said, you are working together to try and defeat these monsters, because if you can defeat them, everyone gets more rewards. Mm-hmm. But you also want to kill the other people so they lose their rewards.
There is another game like this, a similar premise called Cutthroat Caverns. And I've heard mixed reviews on Bloodborne, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of the replayability of it is just not there in some people's opinions. But it sounds like you really enjoyed it. And I know Tom Vassell says he really enjoyed it as well. And he's an opinion of note for sure. So in your opinion, I mean, you've only played it a few times. Is there a replayability there?
I think there is.
Okay.
Again, like you said, I only played it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time, you know, you're just learning it. But you only set out a few different monsters, a few different mini-bosses, and one main boss for the game. And so there are a wealth of others mm-hmm. that don't even get used. And then only a certain amount of upgrade cards will ever be revealed in one game. And so there are some of those that don't get used. And so we never made it through all of them. I think maybe after 5 playthroughs or so, you would exhaust these differences. But at that point, you're playing a different game. You kind of know what you're doing, and you'll change the way you use things. So I definitely would play this again. I want to. We got a few too many people at our game day today, so we had to move on to a game that could allow more players. But
Which we're going to talk about later in the podcast, right?
I mean, I don't know. I don't read the agenda.
Okay.
Dude, what agenda? We just fly by the seat of our pants.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned Eric Lang, designer. Probably one of the most prolific designers of the last 4 or 5 years. A lot of his games seem to be skewed towards a darker theme, if you will. Obviously, I mean, he's interested in this stuff, and I would love to...
Well, I mean, he does a fine job at creating solid games.
No, some of his games are the best. I'm interested in why such evil, dark theme? What is the interest there?
Yeah. I mean, it would be kind of cool to talk to him and be like, so, what up, bro?
And that's just a few out of the games he's created, though. I mean, XCOM, the board game.
Yeah.
Star Wars, the card game. Mm-hmm. Just to name a few that we've played.
Right. Or Dice Masters. XCOM, but
yeah. Dice Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe he likes to just branch out. You don't want to stick with a run-of-the-mill themes.
Right.
Go a little deeper.
Playing as gluttony itself. Not too many of those. It's
true.
Not too many of those.
Also... games about forging a trail to Oregon. We can always have more of those.
Stephen and I have actually picked up a game that we haven't played in a while. Actually, our favorite game, which is good because we get to play our favorite game, but bad because we just haven't played it in so long. So it was exciting to get...
the Oregon Trail.
No! No!
No, Steven. Dead of Winter.
The Long
Night.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
See, we haven't played it in so long.
Right.
It almost slipped thought.
Yeah. No, we got to play our copy of The Long Night, the final production copy.
For the first time, actually.
Yes.
Because we play tested it with of course, like, kind of like the print and play version.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, we got to whip out the old hard copy.
Right. And it wasn't any different than the last playtest copy we had, but...
having physical components was quite nice.
It was, yeah.
The thick cardstock.
Yeah.
You can tell it's been upgraded from the original version.
It has been, yeah. We played a few games of this. We played a long game and a short game. I think, at this point, if you haven't purchased a copy of Dead of Winter yet, definitely get The Long Night, because you're going to get... a lot of awesome characters, but you're also going to get those fun little mods that you can add to the base game itself. And if you really enjoy that and you want the original 30 characters that come in the base game, then then pick that up. But definitely the long night, I think, at this point is the way to go if you're waffling on which one to pick up. Because they play the same. You're just going to get more in that expansion.
That's a game I want to play again soon as well.
Yeah.
And I know that my board game group have heard a lot of it from me.
Right.
So they're also getting a little impatient. So
it's funny. It's funny. My circle of friends, like at work and stuff that I talk to about board games, is the same way. I'm always bringing up Dead of Winter,
right,
and a lot of them haven't played it. And they're always just like, dude, here you are,
right,
talking about Dead of Winter again,
right,
but we haven't played it. And it's like, well.
Whose fault is that? It's probably ours.
Well, it's funny because I'm the only one with a copy.
Despite.
Of both the games, actually.
Yes.
But we've always played it together. So now,
yeah,
now maybe it's time for you two to get your own copy.
So we can have a copy in three different cities.
That's right. To play with three different game groups.
To be fair, it's also because you were always the best one at explaining how to play it as well.
That's true.
So if we played with other people,
mm-hmm,
you were always there with your copy, so
right,
you could help explain it.
I've got to the point where I can explain it in about 10 to 15 minutes, which is actually pretty fast.
That's really
for
good.
As many mechanics as are in that game. It's just the setup takes a little bit of time, but no, I can set a group down and we can start playing that game in 15 minutes, which is great.
And I gotta say, we're actually really good at that game now.
We are. We should be.
I would hope, yeah. But it's funny because we haven't played it in so long, and yet we got it back out on the table. And I mean, I think all of our sessions we won.
Yeah.
Not only completed the main objective, but even like for the most part, we always completed our personal objectives and the whole thing.
Right.
And I remember that when we first played it way back in the day.
Yeah.
The three of us. We just got wrecked and all of us died and it was just chaos and we're like, wow, this game is so hard.
Yeah.
And now it's just like we're just this well-tuned machine.
Yeah.
This little like just BA squad,
right,
of zombie killers.
Well, you think about how many times do you actually play your board games, and I think if you actually look at the number, it's a lot lower, I think, than most people think. But we have legitimately played this game probably 20 some times in one form or another. So yeah, we should be good at it. And the fact that we still love playing it every single time, just a true testament to how good this game is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember I told somebody at one point, like, we've played it, you know, such and such many times.
Right.
And we've gotten to where we work really well as a team and whatever. And they asked me, like, so doesn't that make it boring, though? Because it's just kind of like, if all you do is win, no.
Right.
It's still super awesome.
It
so
is.
Just shut your face.
It's a puzzle. It is a struggle. And I mean, they've got the advanced variant. You flip that main objective card over and it takes it up a few notches. So if you do get to that point like us where it's getting a little bit easier, definitely flip that main objective over and that'll crank it up.
Plus, no matter how strategic and awesome you think you are, you can still never change that the exposure die.
Right.
Exactly.
Especially you, Adam.
I suck at rolling that exposure die.
I don't know what it is, man.
Just a high roller.
Our long variant game we played that was, you know, eight rounds,
mm-hmm,
just survive eight rounds kind of,
right,
deal. We got to, like, the last round, and I finally lost my first character. I had collected like five people, like four,
yeah,
or five people, and I finally lost just one, almost intentionally, because I kept moving him around,
right,
knowing he might die.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up dying, but it was like I probably could have saved him still.
Yeah.
You, Adam, went through like three or four characters just single-handedly.
Yeah, I think I lost five people over the course of those,
yep,
eight rounds.
I mean, what the heck, man?
I know. It's unfortunate. But again, that's part of what makes this game awesome. That, along with the Crossroads cards, you definitely have a winner there. And the funny thing is, we've played this game a lot. However, very rarely is there a betrayer. And I had the opportunity to be the betrayer in one of our short games. And
so did I, actually, right before you. But
our group just, I don't think, enjoys the betrayal aspect as much, because yes, we could be the betrayer and just crush the colony in that last turn, but we're not, I don't know, competitive enough in that way to crush other people's souls at the end of a game. We get more enjoyment out of it at kind of just being cooperative, and you can play it totally cooperative. I mean, you have the option.
Yeah, you can do kind of whatever you want, which is nice. Right. You have the freedom to choose which like route you want to take. Because I thoroughly just enjoy the cooperative, just survival, mm-hmm. sheer survival aspect. And while the betrayal is like a super cool feature to have,
yeah,
it is true. Like every time that we've played a game with a traitor, either they just never do anything, or they do something, but like kind of in a minor kind of way. Mm-hmm. So it's like not like a huge deal, because yeah. you basically played it out. Yeah. For me and Tara, like, hey, so this is what I could do right now.
Right.
And it literally destroyed everything, like, in the right. blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And even though it's, like, kind of cool, I don't know. I know. It ruins everything.
I mean, I told you guys what I was going to do, and the looks on your faces were just like, well, what have we been doing this whole time yeah. then? And that can be fun sometimes, but
depending on who you
that
are.
That sounds awesome to me.
I know. Exactly.
Seth, that sounds amazing.
Time, I've been beating around the bush, but this entire time I've been thinking, Seth, you're the one who right. enjoyed being the traitor so much. But
yeah,
you definitely need to play this more with us, because that's the element we're missing. We're missing that.
The only thing is, I feel like in a long game, it works better.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a traitor somewhere like in the middle, you actually have a few rounds like fighting the traitor, right. and maybe you still have enough morale left to where it can kind of like go on. And it's more entertaining for me dealing with the traitor than it is just having the game immediately end was the thing.
For
like,
sure.
Because we had a short game, there were only like one or two rounds left, and we only had like four or five morale left. And your move literally in like just like that, the game was over. Like all right. the morale was gone, we lost. Mm-hmm. And even though it's like super awesome that you were able to make that move if you wanted, it was still like, it doesn't even take the fun out of like dealing with the traitor, because the game's just over. Right. It's just boom, done.
Yeah.
Which just seemed like it really killed all the like
right.
yeah. But
but if you can pull that off, that's cool. I do agree that the traitor element is more for that reveal in the middle or discovery in the middle and then work against them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can pull off the instant win, that's pretty awesome.
Right. And with the long night, if you do vote somebody out of the colony and they end up not being the betrayer, they get to become the bandit king. Yeah. We definitely want to play with that betrayer every time, just to know that there could be one and potentially socially deduce, if you will, who that may be, which is going to lead us into our next topic, social deduction games.
Oh, yeah.
I have actually played a few new social deduction games recently, and I know, Seth, you have played a few as well. And I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about social deduction and kind of the popularity right now of them. In our Kickstarter podcast a few back, we talked about Dracula's Feast, which That's right. is just one of many social deduction games that have been kickstarted this year. So I want to talk about primarily, let's start with, why do people play social deduction games to begin with? What is the appeal?
I think there's quite a few things. They're pretty light on the rules. It's all about the player interaction. Usually there's not a lot of downtime, and it can support a ton of people.
Right.
So it's just really easy to break out in any party, any group where you have a lot of people that want to play something and don't want to try and get bogged down on rules or learn a heavier game or split up. I mean, almost all of the party games that we play are some sort of social deduction. There are a very few that support a lot of people and don't have those elements.
And I think primarily, I think you hit it on the head with the rules are fairly light most of the time, but the good ones are so elegant that even though they may have very few components or few rules, they work really well and have a lot of replayability. And You mentioned also these are perfect for party type situations where you do have a lot of people together. You keep it light, but these games are so engaging that oftentimes I think they can be gateway games to get your friends to play maybe some of the heavier things that you have on your shelf as well. So if you are getting people together who maybe you don't know that well, or people that don't play board games, these are great games to sit in front of people and say, this is what this hobby is, at least a branch of it, and maybe convert some people into the tabletop gaming hobby.
Definitely. What are you guys' favorite social deduction games?
I think it would probably make my top 10 at this point still, and that's One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Steven.
She's always going on about it.
Yeah. I just don't understand it.
I know. No, I mean, we played this last night, and it's just as good as it was the first time I played it. You definitely need the right group. You need people that can have a poker face, but it's just so fast and silly, and generally the rounds end with everybody just in laughter or anger about how they've been backstabbed or how somebody misdirected. It's just light, and it does a lot with how little there is to it. It's just a handful of cards. And the app that accompanies it is probably one of the best game apps that I've discovered, at least as a helper. Unlike Werewolf, you don't need a narrator because the app does it for you, which is another reason why I enjoy it. So probably my favorite social deduction is still One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Nice.
What about you, Steven?
Oh, boy. I would say that just like the super classic Mafia,
right,
has like some nostalgia for sure. I don't know if I would say it's my favorite. We've come a long way.
Better
ways,
not be.
But I would probably say it's close between Spyfall and Resistance Avalon.
Right.
It'd be pretty close. Probably leaning towards Spyfall, honestly. Mm-hmm. Adds that level of stress with the whole spy.
Right.
You know, like you don't know where you're at when you're a spy. So you have right. no idea what you're doing, but you have to still keep that poker face and mm-hmm. ask those questions that like don't just totally blow your cover, you know?
Right.
It's very interesting. And then for the other people, just having to engage and like interview almost one another, trying to find out who the spy is. And it's very mm-hmm. just.
And giving those clever answers too.
Right.
Like it really allows you to go beyond what other games might let you do, where you can kind of play it your own way, giving your own answers that aren't dictated by cards or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about like the creativity of like, how can I answer this without actually answering it? Or how can I answer this in a way that like reveals a little bit, but not too much, or this. And I mean, yeah, there are many layers to it. Right. And then I also enjoy how there's like the side of role play mm-hmm. because everyone, not just the spy, is actually given like a character as well that they can choose to play as or not.
Right.
Yeah. That also is like optional, but the fact that you can be like playing as the owner of this nightclub. Mm-hmm. And so then all of your answers you can kind of tailor towards what would this owner say about this situation or how he respond to this question, you know? And
right.
it's a lot of
right.
fun.
It really changes it and actually makes it a little more difficult and a little more intricate.
Right.
Yep.
I agree. Actually, Spyfall is pretty close to my top as well. And it's one that I've only actually started playing recently with my game group. But we've all had a really good time with it. Even people kind of new to board games that we've had in just play it. It's been going over really well. I still think I'd have to say, though, and not just because I'm the only one who's played it, but Secret Hitler. Mm-hmm. It kind of just takes all of my favorite elements from the different social deduction games and puts them all together in a really compact and fun format. And again, it's a game that I have just pulled out with people who don't normally game, and they get it, and it works really well, and it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned a number of times putting these games in front of people, maybe that you don't know that well even, and because they are social deduction games, that means there is a lot of talking, there's a lot of interaction with other players. There's communication that happens. And these are perfect games for people to get to know each other, because when you play these games, different personalities kind of come forth. You get to know them through these games, which is again why we do this to begin with. Is
well, and you get to find the people who are scary good at lying, so you don't, like, never trust them with things, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
Seth, yeah, no, you and I haven't actually gotten to play many social deduction games together, which is unfortunate, because I know you and I really like them, and I think we could have a battle of wits
with some of these.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's my favorite thing is to betray people in games.
Right.
Especially after explicitly earning their trust. And it's so satisfying. That's one of the reasons why Secret Hitler is one of my favorites, is because it takes that element up to 11, where you're literally Hitler convincing the people to vote you in as chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there it is. You've betrayed everybody. It's just so drastic.
Dude, it's so funny, though, because, you know, board game point of view, it's all about the different points of view, right?
Yeah.
That aspect is, like, my least favorite thing ever. Like, not only, like, if it happens to me, that's one thing, then it kind of sucks and whatever. But, like, so often, like, cannot bring myself to actually, like, if I'm going to be the villain, I'm just going to start out the villain.
Right.
But, like, the concept of I'm going to earn your trust and then I'm going to just crap all over you. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do it. I'm like, it's just too, like, harsh. I hate it.
There's so much of that.
I'm like Mr. Cooperative. If there's a cooperative game out there, I want to play it. And then Seth's like, if I can betray you, I want to play it. And then Adam, you're like right in the middle.
I am right in the middle. Yeah. But yeah, there are aspects of betrayal in a lot of these games. And a lot of these are just simple poker. Again, you're not really playing the card that you've been given. You're playing the people. And I enjoy poker as well, so maybe
play some Texas Hold'em one of these days, or some blackjack.
The thing about poker is it just takes so darn long. The attrition to do it well, I don't have it.
I don't know who you've been playing poker with. When I play poker, it's lightning.
Then yes, I want to play poker with you.
First round sets, like, all in.
So yeah, let's talk. I mean, we've talked about who these games are for. Let's touch maybe briefly on who these aren't for, because like Steven said, he indicated that he doesn't like some of the aspects of these social deduction games. So there are people who don't enjoy these. So what would be an alternative game? Something maybe as simple, but doesn't have the backstabbing kind of betrayal.
My instant, like, thought process goes towards, like, snake oil and just even, like, apples to apples and things like that, because it has the same real simple rules.
Right.
Same just basic tabletop card game kind of format. Mm. Very social, very much based on player interaction of, like, you know, putting in your answers, or, like, snake oil. You have to pitch this product. It's very, like, you have to get up and actually say, like, sell this random product that you invented and try to get this guy to, like, buy your idea kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, I'm going to buy your product. And then he sits down and you're like, just kidding. I'm going to rip it up to shreds and throw it in your face.
Oh, but wouldn't that be great? No, just kidding.
And so I would kind of just lean that way when it comes to, like, a social game that's a bit more lighthearted, a little bit less focused on, like, the intricate. It's less deduction is all it really is. I mean, I suppose you could sit down and play apples to apples and try to figure out who put in each card. I mean, people can do that.
Yeah.
But,
well, and I mean, a social deduction game that we all enjoy is Love Letter. There's really not a lot of betrayal in that, but that is a social deduction game.
It's very limited deduction,
it is,
though.
It's
but
very
I suppose
limited.
It would qualify, yeah.
It is.
So maybe that one.
For people who don't like the bigger, like, set them up, betrayal, like, trying to figure out who everybody is, I definitely agree. Love Letter is perfect for that.
So let's talk about kind of the whole genre. And we mentioned earlier that there are a lot of them. Do you guys feel like it's getting to a point where there are too many. The market is becoming too saturated with these.
I don't think so.
I do think so.
Well. All right. You first. Why?
Now, I'll preface this by saying that, to be fair, there's only a small handful of them that I have actually played personally. So my experience is limited. But when I go into a shop like Rook's and I look at their small box section or something like that, and I see all of these cards that look almost the exact same about social deduction, and you have, I mean, like, if you compare Resistance, then Avalon is just kind of like an expansion or like a tie-off, of course, of Resistance. Mm-hmm. But you have those, and then you have Secret Hitler, and you have all these different games, One Night Ultimate Werewolf, and it's all just like subtle changes to mm-hmm. the same basic idea. And even though they're all good games, I look at all these and I'm like, okay, cool. But then you look down the shelf and there's like 10 more mm-hmm. that seem to be very, very similar. And I'm like, how long can we keep doing this? Of like, hey, let's have a game that we all stand in a circle and we all have hidden roles mm-hmm. and we have to figure out who each other are.
Yeah.
But now, get this.
There's all right. I see your point. I mean, I see your point.
It gets a little bit much.
Right.
All the newer ones that I've been playing, they just keep getting better and better. Mm-hmm. Like, we said, like, Spyfall is a pretty recent addition to our collections, and it's risen to the top. And then Secret Hitler is also very new. Mm-hmm. And again, it just brings that next level to the genre that we know and enjoy playing. But now it's better. So, yeah, there are a bunch that maybe aren't good, but that's the same with any board game. I feel like social deduction is just easier to break into.
Well, it's true. The only thing, I mean, Spyfall, the reason why I like it so much is because it's kind of drastically different with some of the things that it added from, like, the more basic ones. Like, to me, Spyfall is a lot more complex and has a lot more elements than, like, Resistance or one of
exactly.
those. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that I do appreciate. But it just seems like if you just look at the standard, like, average social deduction game that people are trying to back on Kickstarter or do whatever with, it's getting really repetitive.
Well, you could say that about the standard Euro game, the standard deck builder.
Well, then maybe that brings us to the question of, are there too many of all of these?
Whoa, dude, that's heresy. Are there too many board games?
I'm just saying, answering the question at hand.
Right.
And I feel like, on average, it's getting right up to that brink of like,
yeah.
maybe we should just slow it down a little bit on
right.
the social deduction. Uh-huh. And if we are, I mean, again, if you have like some innovative, really crazy, cool, awesome idea for a social deduction game that's like new, I'm all for it.
Right.
But a lot of this, like, this game versus this game, there's literally a difference of like one minor rule. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, but.
Yeah, I mean, but it is true. And I'm going to actually, in true form,
go right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
Yep.
I'm going to say, yes, there are too many social deduction games.
That
However,
doesn't sound like right down
with,
the middle.
No, here's where it's down the middle. Like with you, Seth, I think it almost is a necessity to have as many to create the innovative steps in making them better. I think each one stands on the shoulders of the one before it, and you just can't. You can't have the breakthroughs without going through that process.
Well said.
So let's then close out the social deduction conversation with, if you're looking for something light, what do you play? And then maybe something a little heavier, what do you play? So looking at the light, we've already mentioned One Night Ultimate Werewolf and Love Letter. Those are a really good place to start. They're fast and just about as rudimentary a social deduction game as you can get. So maybe once you've played those, you step into something like Secret Hitler or The Resistance, where you still have the hidden roles, but now there's a little bit more intrigue. There's a little bit more playing the table. There's more deceiving the other players sitting around you. And after that, you can get into Spyfall once you've kind of figured out how to play another person, how to deceive them, having kind of felt some of the pressure a little bit in something like The Resistance, because in Spyfall, if you're the spy, that's some serious pressure right there, because if you don't answer a question vaguely enough, I mean, you're just done. So Spyfall is a good one then to step into. And then you get into coup and masquerade, which are a little bit on the heavier end, where they are a little bit more cerebral. And you do have to very carefully lie to the other people at the table, because in those games, you are actually all playing essentially the same characters. I mean, you are an individual, but you get to have the opportunity to lie about who you actually are and take advantage in those situations. So all of these are great social deduction games. And like we said in the beginning, these are really good to break people into the hobby. So yeah, now we're going to do something that we really haven't done on the podcast before. And this is, we're going to take a look at a game that we reviewed probably more than a year ago. This was a Spiel des Jahres winner a few years back. We decided that it didn't deserve it, but Seth has brought it to our attention again in a very positive light. So we are going to give it another chance, and we're gonna talk about Camel Up, everybody.
First we had a view, then we had a review, and
right?
Now we have a re-review.
Okay.
Of Camel Up.
No. And this is the guy who's the spokesman for this game right now.
Now,
really, it is appealing to higher intellect.
We've all played this game quite a few times with varied numbers of players. And I don't know. I think Steven and I are kind of standing firm on our opinion that this is really not that great a game. But Seth, please try and sway our opinion.
All right. Well, first of all, it's just really fun, really easy, really silly, right? You can't deny that.
Oh, no. I mean, a Spiel des Jahres winner has to be a fun, family-friendly game, and it certainly is both of those things.
Yeah, and it has elements of strategy. It has elements of luck. It just has those things you can do to change the odds in your favor.
I guess we should say, for people that aren't familiar with Camel Up, go back and listen to episode 16 of the podcast, where we do give a rundown of it. But to quickly describe the game, it's about camel racing, and you are betting on these camels as they race around a track. And you can do things to improve your chances each leg of the race. And you can bet on the overall winner of the race. You can bet on the overall loser. And you will be rewarded if you bet correctly. However, just like with any betting, if you are the first to say that, yes, this camel will win or this camel will lose, then you are going to get a higher payout than the player who bet on that camel second or third. So there's a lot of chance involved. Each camel is a different color, and it has a specific colored die that pops out of a really fun little pyramid dice dispenser. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's truly a marvel of modern engineering.
It is in board gaming. This thing is one of the
coolest
components in a board game, hands
and that,
down.
That is the one thing that I have always given Camel Up, is that pyramid is amazing.
Right.
Yeah, it blows my mind.
Right.
But that's about it.
Well, and as the camels race around the track, they actually jump on top of each other. And according to the way that they're stacked, the camel on top is actually in the lead. The camel on the bottom is further back. So there's strategy in that way as well. However, it's just there's a lot of chaos. And the betting, I think, is a little bit broken because it's open information is kind of my big thing. If it were hidden information, I think the game would be a lot better. But Seth, you have played this recently with a bunch of people and you guys are loving it.
Yeah, I will say that loving it and enthralled with it may be too strong.
Okay.
But we had a great time with it. It mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. We played it twice in a row. When you say that it has the chaos, it reminds me of perhaps a better game, but it reminds me of Colt Express, actually, where,
yeah,
I mean, you talked about the hidden information, and this is obviously open information, but it's the thing where anything can change, Anything can happen, and you're just kind of along for the ride and see what happens.
Colt Express also won Game of the Year. So
Colt Express also is very reminiscent to Camel Up because it utilizes cardboard to make its own little marvelous wonder
right.
in the miniature train.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite as like significant from an engineering standpoint right. as the pyramid from Camel Up, but very cool nonetheless.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I suppose if you have randomness,
yeah,
you have silliness.
Yep.
You have sweet cardboard, like, constructs.
Yeah.
And a group of just wild friends.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's just the recipe for Game of the Year.
I think so. And like, six players. Yeah, for sure.
That is something I'm interested in talking about, is how yeah. many players do you guys primarily play it with?
Generally between four and six.
I would say mm-hmm. that my average was four.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys played it one-on-one or with just maybe three people?
I've played it one-on-one, yeah.
How did you feel about that version?
Just the one-on-one?
Yeah.
I felt like I was driving a sports car through pedestrian neighborhoods because I feel like this game deserves to be played with as many people as it can because that's what this game was built for. But you're telling me no.
Here's what I think okay. it's silly and hilarious with a bunch of people, but it's also gets to the point where the randomness is just, it's too much. So many things can happen between your turn and the next turn that it just depends on who rolls the die. But one-on-one, there's so much more manipulating, moving around your tiles to boost or hinder different camels. There's so much more of that, and you can't just get lucky and have someone roll a die that puts a camel in first place and then be able to cash out on the top bet the next round.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think one of the complaints that both Steven and I have with Camel Up is that it can take so long to come back to your turn. So having your turn come back just after one other player has taken an action actually does sound real appealing.
Yeah, it puts a lot more strategy into it. And then sacrificing your turn to maybe make one of those bets on the overall winner or overall loser, or mm-hmm. to bet on an unlikely camel, isn't going to be like your one action that you get or one of the two actions you get in a round.
So you're telling us that this party game meant for many players to play is actually best with just two?
From my limited experience, you have the most control. And while there's still the hilarious random elements, it's just a little bit easier to digest with fewer people. That being okay. said, with lots of people, it's still hilarious. But it gets to the point where you don't want to play it over and over because you have so few tools at your disposal to really mm-hmm. make an impact. Also, though, I will say that the person who won the game both times is our resident board game winner of everything. So there has to be at least some strategy because I don't know how he won twice in a row again. Does it make sense unless he's calculating it?
I don't know if I'm won over.
Still on the fence. Yeah.
My entire problem with this game is just simply the betting system itself. Adam, you touched on it, but mm-hmm. the open betting, I just hate it.
Right.
Like because if I recall correctly, the bet on who will be the winner at the end of the race is placed face down,
right.
correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one, I actually very much appreciate because right. it's like, dude, who are you gunning for in the long run?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else knows. There's some mystery about it.
Yeah.
But the fact that like you can wait if there's several players, of course, and see like, mm-hmm. okay, these like two or three people have all bet on the same camel.
Right.
So then I'll just throw mine on there too because I'll just go with the flow or I'll do this or I'll do that. And it's just...
Well, that's the thing is that you can only bet on one camel three times in a leg.
Right.
So, like, you have to jump on it early or you're not getting money, or you're just getting maybe like $1, or you're making $2 from this bet.
Right. Yeah. I think I mentioned this the last time we looked at CamelUp, but I think what I'm going to do with my game is actually mod it and take all the betting chips and blacken out one of the sides, because they're double-sided and they're the same on both sides. But when a player bets, they can pick up this stack and put them all in one stack. They pick up the stack and choose one, and now they bet on a camel, but nobody else at the table knows which camel they've bet on, unless they're the next player who then picks up the stack and now has the opportunity to maybe deduce which one they've bet on. That to me sounds like a little bit more fun and a little bit more realistic, because you go to the track, you're not going to run around telling people necessarily who you're betting on. So I may do that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I do think the leg betting needed a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see if that fixes that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just like the end bet is pretty solid, because it's just a good old classic, just a bet, you know, right. It's like whatever. And then that pyramid, though.
Yeah.
Just classic.
Well, this game definitely falls into the category, I think, more so than a lot of, you either enjoy this game or you really don't. There's not a lot of middle ground, at least from those that I've spoken to. But I may mod my copy and play it again and try the two-player thing more and see how it goes. But
looks like we're going to start modding a lot of our games to fit our own super high standards.
I know. We are board game designers in training.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dude, the only game that needs no modding at all.
Don't say it.
They're a winner.
No, oh, okay, yeah.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
Yeah. And the Oregon Trail.
Oh. Come on. Let's finish out this podcast talking about another Game of the Year winner, Codenames. And we're not going to talk about Codenames in particular, but the two variants that have since been published. And Seth, again, you have played and or own both of these. That is Codenames Pictures and Codenames Deep Undercover, which is, I believe, the more adult version, if I'm not mistaken.
The very adult version.
Okay. Yeah.
How deep undercover are you, Seth?
Yeah, let's start there.
Oh, so deep.
Okay.
Coming from the roll. Sorry. You can cut it out. You can cut it out. But oh,
dude,
man.
No. Thank you, Steven. That all right, everything so, worth it.
Oh,
everything.
Man.
No, Adam's right. That's going to get frowned upon. But
there's
I'm just going to have to use our signature bleep.
Okay.
Rubber ducky.
That'll maybe work.
Yeah. But yeah, Seth.
Although that almost draws more attention to it.
Yeah, but then they don't know.
Everyone
what
always
it,
wonders,
what it
like, how bad was it?
It's, I mean, none of the stuff that you guys are going to hear on this podcast is that bad. The bleeps are for more comedic entertainment than anything. But yeah, Seth, tell us about Deep Undercover.
Well, Deep Undercover is pretty much just the adult version of Codenames.
Sure.
I'm sure they were just trying to cash in on that whole, ooh, it's 18 plus, so it's taboo thing.
Right.
But it's actually kind of fun. The thing is that the words they give, while there are a few that are just, you know, very explicit, one meaning, most of the ones they give have just normal meanings, but then also the more dirty meanings as well. So it doesn't like take away from being able to put together different words in one clue or find out those different meanings. Although it does make it a little easier, I think, to string together certain combos just because of the subject matter. You can kind of pick out something that works for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I would recommend this one. It was fun to play a couple times.
Okay.
Definitely had a blast, but.
So this might be a no-brainer question, but you bring up how some cards are obvious, whereas others aren't as obvious. Is it just simply one of those things where if you have like a really dirty mind, like inherently, you can make connections between words that most people would look at and be like, how is that dirty? But like some guys can like forge their own path through
there. Well, I mean, there's some that are just obvious. Like,
yeah.
I could say them, but, you know, they have to get bleeped out. And then there are some that are just like, strictly anatomy, so it's like that has one meaning.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I know we joked about this when we were talking about kind of these more adult games or not safe for work versions, about how middle schoolers and high schoolers would sneak out and maybe they'd pick up Dirty Minds or something, and that was just, you know, the thing.
Give them the rush.
Right. You know? I mean, would you point to this game to say this is a safe game if you're going to be rebellious, as opposed to something like Cards Against or something maybe even a little dirtier? Is this a game that they would enjoy?
I think so.
Specifically for you rebels out there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the fact is that it's still just a really good game. It's still Codenames.
Sure. Yeah.
It just has that slightly different twist on it. And you can still be as creative as you want. You can still find those just combos that somehow make sense when you give that one word clue. And it's not just super explicit. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dude, I won't lie. I really want to play this with you, Seth. Dude, I feel like you and I would actually kind of have a blast at this. But.
I think so, too.
And Adam, you could... I suppose you could join, but...
No, I will probably not partake.
Yeah.
It's fun for a little bit. I mean, but the fact of the matter is that even though it's a good game, it's the base game is just as good and better.
And more, a little bit more accessible to like broader audiences.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So yeah, no, I 100% agree. But for that, at least that one playthrough,
that one time,
I think it would be fun to check it out. Fun. But
so if you're gonna get a dirty novelty game, Board Game Point of View recommends
The Oregon Trail.
BGPV stamp of approval for adult game Oregon Trail.
After 2016. Dark.
Oregon Trail After Dark.
Yeah, Oregon Trail Nighttime Edition.
We did end up playing the Oregon Trail shirtless, I believe.
It's true.
What?
Now, that was definitely a running joke. Every single time I had to get rid of an equipment card, I would throw all my clothes away.
It's like strip Oregon Trail.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's talk about pictures.
Yeah, so pictures.
How do you have that picture in your mind of us playing the game?
Nice.
Codenames Pictures.
So contrary to Deep Undercover, I think Pictures actually surpasses the standard Codenames.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was, at first, I wasn't sure. I didn't really know. They only have their own unique things that you can do. And I think the original Codenames does have a little bit more complexity. And I like that more. But Pictures, the images they give you are so well done. That can have multiple different meanings, and they're so pleasing to look at that it just makes for a really great experience. And so even though it's the same style of game, you can string together a lot of different combinations than you could with just words, because now everyone's looking at the same pictures, so it's a little easier to make those jumps that you normally wouldn't have been able to.
Sure.
So I think that makes it a little more accessible, a little bit faster. A little bit less stressful. Rounds go a little quicker for the Spy Masters too, but it still is neck and neck. It's still close. There are still those cards that it could go either way. A lot of that same elements, just a little easier to get into. And not that it's like, that's just an easy game, but is a game that I would pick off the shelf just to play at any point more quickly than the original Codenames.
Sure. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think you are echoing a lot of comments from other people who have played both. However, most of them actually say they still prefer the original. But from what I hear, it is, I wouldn't say a less cerebral, but they do say it plays faster and it is more accessible. And with something like Pictures, you can even, I know we don't talk about this often, but if you're playing with people from maybe different countries, you go to a convention and they don't know a lot of English, or you don't know a lot of the language they're speaking, you put this down and you can still play this, even with a limited vocabulary, whereas with standard Codenames, you need to be able to understand and read all of the words presented to you.
Exactly.
Dude, fair point, Adam. I knew we hired you for something.
Yeah, so Codenames Pictures, I enjoy it a lot. And who knows, maybe I'll play it a few more times, and then we'll go back to the original. But right now, that's the one I've got my eye on when we're going to play a version of Codenames.
Nice. Well, I like the idea of playing the same game and having a different version, just maybe even dependent on how much mental room you have at the
exactly,
time.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that idea. Well, gentlemen, thus concludes episode 38. Any final thoughts?
Dude, we're almost over the hill, man.
Okay. I see you.
Oh, nice. We still want you guys to hit us up on Twitter to suggest names for our advisors in our Seafall campaign. We are looking for the name of a convict, a dude. So send those over to us, hashtag BGPOV name game. So join us again in a few weeks for episode 39. Good night, everybody. Tara just said she didn't enjoy Oregon Trail, but that's because she died
of dysentery. So clearly we can't trust her judgment. Excuse me. You can't hear what Seth is saying, to be fair. But...
Seth! What? I didn't say anything bad. It was old Steven. Tell her that.
We're just...
Seth is just bad-mouthing you hard.
No! No! You have to leave this in.